Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 199 for comics originally released on June 1st, 2011. Now, starting us off in DC is Superboy number 8. Now, I'm going to say that one of the things that's going to color my perspective on some of the DC comics for the next, you know, month or two is they've just announced that DC is going to be relaunching all of their superhero titles with new number ones and stuff in September. So there's a certain amount of this Superboy story we're about to talk about is going to end. We know it's going to end by issue 10 because it's the last one they solicited before it goes to not only a new Superboy number one, but potentially a new Superboy. So it's going to be kind of interesting just to see how the DC universe plays out, and also if in some of these cases there's kind of a filling of time sense to some of these stories. You know what I mean, Bob?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's like, does this issue matter, quote-unquote, anymore? You know, for people who are big on reading stories and continuity in the DC universe, like the Marvel universe, because seeing the solicits that are up online for the new Superboy and the new Teen Titans, it certainly looks like there is going to be a gap between this Superboy series and the next one. It doesn't look like Batman. It seems like it'll just continue without a hitch. This one, it looks like there's going to be a skip or a hiccup of some sort.
It's funny because it certainly looks that way on Superboy, but I could almost see ramifications of this storyline, particularly with what's his name?
Phantom Stranger?
No, the kid from the future.
Oh, yeah.
Psionic Lad or whatever.
Yeah.
That may actually tie into the storyline going on in Legion Lost and Legion of Superheroes after the relaunch. So there are a lot of ways all of this could go. But it, you know, time will tell. And it's also, even if the stories don't really matter in the continuity post-relaunch, there's a just are they good stories.
Right.
But this was one where it really kind of fell short for me in a few areas. This issue felt like it had lots of portends of stuff to come, but not really enough payoff. I mean, the flashback to the origin of Smallville, kind of cool. Little surprised it didn't reference kind of that Kent's 12-issue series, you know, at least by name in the footnotes, because as you had mentioned to me before I started reading this, there are actual footnotes in this comic. And it's like, that's cool. I like to see those. Because it's, that's where this happened, and it's a good memory jog. And if you don't remember the issue because you either forgot it or haven't read it, you know where to go look. But I just felt that not enough really happened here. The issue kind of fell flat for me, and you know, the more I thought about it, the more I realized Superboy doesn't really do much of anything in this issue. He listens to the story about the history of Smallville, and there's that kind of the don't go down there area at one point in the story, and of course they go down there. I mean, that's you know, nature of the beast. But there just wasn't a lot of action. This felt very much like the middle chapter of a larger story, which it is, but as a single issue, like I said, it kind of fell flat. It didn't have the payoff. It was just kind of there.
I seem to have liked it more than you did. It was funny if it seemed like the middle chapter because it was the first chapter of a story. So, you know, Jeff Lemire must have really not been firing on cylinders for you if his first chapter seemed like a middle chapter. I kind of came into it and I said, okay, here's what's going on. Got Phantom Stranger running around. I mean, I've been liking what Jeff Lemire's been doing with Superboy. You know, we had the flashbacks to the Kents and the founding of Smallville, as you say. I liked that. He's setting up a mystery. And it is kind of weird and supernatural, which I like those kind of stories, I think, a lot more than you do.
Yeah,
which
that's
might have
true.
Also had to, you know, colored, you know, the perceptions of the story. And then, you know, we go down and there's like some weird, like, you know, zombie looking dudes running around and stuff. So it looks like there's a definite supernatural, strange twist, which a lot of times you're going to get when Phantom Stranger, you know, pops into a story anyway. I liked it as a setup, and I'm interested to see the payoff and how this story progresses in issues 9 and 10 before this particular run on the series ends. And I don't believe Jeff Lemire is going to be continuing on with Superboy, so this is pretty much his last story for now with the character before it restarts. But I, as a story, I liked it just fine. I gave it a 4 out of 5.
I gave it a 3, and I guess part of why it felt like the middle of a story versus the beginning of one is it starts with the Phantom Stranger, you know, kind of referencing, hey, I've been following Superboy for a little bit, and referencing previous events in the series. And then likewise, we get the Psionic Lad, who also is referencing kind of previous things in the series. So you're right, this is probably the first part of this, you know, the zombies down in the cave storyline. But because they've done callbacks to some of the, I guess, really subplot aspects of previous issues, although I thought the Phantom Stranger was front and center in one of them, that's part of why it felt more like the middle of something for me.
And right, I can see that, because that goes back to the old style of doing comics, where even though you're telling a new story, you're always kind of weaving in and making it seem like it's part of a larger something.
Yeah. And it's just that since that storytelling style is so unusual these days, I just kind of defaulted to the, oh, it must be the middle part of a, what's going to be a trade or something.
Right, right.
The other thing that's been bugging me a lot lately in DC Comics last week or two, and has nothing unique to Superboy, but I'm going to mention it here anyways, is this damn Super 8 insert they've got in everything.
Yeah, I just skip over it.
I skip over it too, but it's, you know, far enough you've got it, it's like, okay, where does it end? And you know, it's, you know, 8-page insert with a coverish kind of a thing on it, and it's just, it's in the way.
The first time I got to it, it's like, what is this, you know? And then, you know, I'm like reading through it, and it's like, okay, I don't know that it's gonna particularly make me want to see that movie any more than I would have wanted to see it before I read this 8-page little comic. But
it didn't make me want to see it any more than the video game preview for it in Portal 2 did. I have no desire to see the thing, and it's just, again, getting it the once, not a big deal, but getting it in every DC comic I'm getting these days, bit much.
Adds a good bit of weight.
Yeah, I got to imagine the retailers aren't happy about that on the shipping costs. Jeez. Now, while Jeff Lemire is not going to be continuing with Superboy, he does have two or three titles in the relaunch DC Universe that he's going to be doing, so it'll be fun to be reading those.
Yeah, now, speaking of the relaunch DC Universe, I do have a thread up on our forum that's got now all of the solicits for the new 52, and thanks to one of our listeners, I have the full solicit text now added in, so that thread in alphabetical order has all of the comics, the blurbs that came out last week in all the comics news sites, plus the full September solicit text, including page counts, prices, and ship dates for all the books, and cover images. So you kind of have a one-stop shopping there if you want to find out about the 52 relaunch. It's a stickied post, and you can find it. It's called DC New Titles and Images Master List. It's near the top of the forum. And if you want to talk about it, we have a pretty active thread called DC Universe Relaunch in September 2011. That's where you go to talk about it. But that Master List is just a single long locked post that's kind of a reference for what's coming new in the DCU.
Cool.
And next up from Marvel, we've got the second volume of the S.H.I.E.L.D. series from Jonathan Hickman and Dustin Weaver. And this one pretty much picks up where the last one left off. We've got Da Vinci running around and, you know, it's kind of interesting. I really like how he's setting the roots of this world-protecting organization, S.H.I.E.L.D., back in historical times and using characters from history like Leonardo da Vinci and Isaac Newton, and you got Nostradamus in there. You have Galileo, Nikola Tesla, you know, and then he weaves in Tony Stark's dad and Reed Richards' dad and, you know, other characters like that. And just is telling a very cool story that, you know, I love the art, and it's certainly, I don't think it's something that's going to appeal to everybody, because you don't have the superheroes in tights, you know, thumping on things factor in this that you have in a lot of other Marvel comics, most other Marvel comics. But it's a fascinating story, and I love it.
Well, I think what Hickman's doing here is not only just really some very cool and interesting stuff, but it's also very out of the box and very different, like you were saying, from your average Marvel comic. This is more a historical fiction kind of a title, and again, big inserting of backstory for S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Marvel Universe. And, you know, I think part of what makes this title so great is that it is so different from everything else. You know, and just some of the cool ideas that are introduced here. The whole deja vu scene later in the issue was, you know, I loved that. I thought it was great. And, you know, Hickman is doing something on a very big canvas here. And it's bouncing around in time quite a bit, which frankly, not overly, you know, keen on that storytelling structure, but it's needed for this story. You know, he's bouncing between, you know, Rome in 1502 to, where else does he go? The Immortal City in 1960 to, you know, someplace in 1630, and then, you know, bouncing around to some other time frames. And part of it is this story is not contained in a small location or time period. So he's doing some big picture stuff here, and the cast of characters he's got, which is fairly huge, is introduced in a very easy to connect with way, in a very easy to identify with way. And part of it is some are historical figures, some are connected to key Marvel Universe figures, but they're all introduced effectively and quickly. And also the art by Dustin Weaver here is just great. It's something that he's able to switch gears going from one time frame to another very easily. It's a very detailed art style. It's a very clean art style, which I think the choice of artist is really critical when you've got, you know, Michelangelo, Da Vinci, and historical artists and stuff in the story. Having something that has a good sense of art style and stuff about it, I think, is critical.
And it's also important to make the people look visually distinct, because you don't have that costume as a key, you know, that colorful, distinctive costume to tell the people apart. But I've not had any trouble telling the characters apart in this, even though they're mostly wearing regular kind of clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
Although Da Vinci's wearing kind of a wild outfit, so.
Yeah, there's some period piece aspect to the regular clothes, but you're right, they don't have that costume shorthand that they can rely on. So the differentiation of the characters and just the details on the expressions and stuff like that, there's a certain amount of acting in this art that, you know, not all artists are able to pull off. Now, this is a series that, frankly, I'm going to say should be read in trade. And what I mean by that in this specific case is I think each issue is a very satisfying read and a good deal just kind of in and of themselves. But, man, there's a larger whole here to be had. And that, for me at least, I think if I read it in a single sitting, that additional depth of those other layers would be more visible and more enjoyable. So I think it can be successfully and enjoyably read individually, but I think to get the greater sum of it, doing it in a single sitting is probably the best way to go.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's just we spend so little time in a few of these time frames that to kind of stitch the pieces together on everything, for me, you know, would help to do it in a shorter
time. Well, plus it's bi-monthly, isn't it?
I believe so.
So you have a little, it's a very dense read too. I mean, there's a lot of information coming at you in this book. And I think also just a lot of detail in the art actually matters. It's not just superfluous, you know, stuff. You know, I have a feeling that, you know, if you look at stuff in the background, you know, there's stuff in here that makes a difference. But I definitely give this a 5 out of 5. absolutely fabulous comic.
For me, it came close to that. I gave it the four, and it's a strong four. I think part of it is, again, I know that there's a certain other level of this story that, because of the time frame between issues and stuff like that, is just a little hard for me to kind of get on the monthly basis. But certainly, the quality going into this is not your average Marvel comic by a long shot. And people looking to see something kind of different, you know, like a historical fiction kind of a thing, this is a good thing to check out, even if you normally don't read Marvel comics.
And speaking of historical fiction, our last book of the week is from Red 5 Comics. It's Foster Broussard, Demons of the Gold Rush, number one. What did you think of this one, John?
I like this. I like this actually quite a bit. I think the lead character is kind of the bit of the scoundrel in kind of the classic way, charming, clever, always working an angle, pretty much always in trouble. Structure at the beginning of the story is kind of the thief and his lawman keeper. And this kind of a buddy pairing is a tried and true pairing in stories, just because it's got that built-in character dynamic of each trying to work at cross purposes with the other. But why do they keep hanging around to do that? Well, because they kind of have to, given the situation. And I found the lead character just a lot of fun. I mean, quick-thinking con men, by nature, can be fun to read about, because they've got a bit of the attitude, a bit of the unpredictability, a bit of the, yep, they're going to get in trouble and do something interesting. And I felt that in the course of this issue, we get introduced to half a dozen or so key characters, but each is kind of done in turn very effectively. So it's like, okay, we get to know Foster, we get to know the guy, you know, who's his keeper and, you know, the story or whatever. Then we get over to the new world, and then we get to meet, you know, his old buddy. We get to meet this person, we get to meet that person and stuff. And so it's not like it's all thrust at you at once, and it's in very digestible chunks and very entertaining chunks. And if this isn't already making the rounds in Hollywood, it really should be, because to me, this has the making of a summer blockbuster movie. You know, you get somebody like Owen Wilson or somebody to play Foster Broussard, round out the rest of the cast with some good actors and stuff. It just seems like it's a natural fit and would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, Owen Wilson would be a good choice for him. What I liked about the story, and, you know, the story is by Trevor Price. Give him some... it was created by Trevor Price. The writer was David Zeibart. Z-I-E-B-A-R-T. Maybe it's Zeibart, Zeibart. Sorry, David. What I liked about... And it's a lot of it has to do with David's writing, I think, in this, is when you have this kind of lovable rogue kind of character, you're treading a fine line on having them be the lovable part and not just coming off like a jerk, you know. And it takes some doing when you're putting these kind of characters together to have them click with the reader and have them fall, you know, have that lovable characteristic while you still see the rogue part of the character also, and they're not just jerky. And yeah, he did a really good job of that, because, you know, I came out of this issue really liking the Foster Broussard character and wanting to read more about his story. The art was fine. You know, the art did not knock my socks off. It was effective at telling the story. But the story itself really captured my heart. So I'm definitely coming back for the rest of this series.
Well, I think that certainly the concept was good, the writing was phenomenal, and the art, I think, is easy to overlook aspects of. I mean, if you go to the page where we first get to see, you know, Foster's face, and he's doing the, well, you normally don't see me like this, you normally see me like this kind of expression, we get some detail and some subtlety in that art, where, again, there's kind of that acting going on, and that helps, I think, establish Foster's character, you know, and again, gave it a bit more of a cinematic feeling, because there's a need for that acting, a need for that subtlety, a need to kind of convey the playfulness of the character, which, again, gives him that lovable aspect, versus he's just a conniving thief and trying to get the best of everybody.
Right, you have a good point. I mean, I think the pacing, the layout, and the just kind of the how the art is put together is, you know, for me, really well done. And just stylistically, some of the actual finish details on the art, you know, it's kind of like that's where it was a little shy of, you know, what I would, you know, be in my complete wheelhouse of, you know, perfect art.
And I'm not going to disagree with that, but I think it hit the notes it really needed to. Again, you look at the three panels across the two pages there, pages 4 and 5 of the story. We get Foster looking concerned, Foster looking like, ooh, I've got the angle. And then, you know, on that next page, that bottom, you know, left panel there, kind of the I'm toying with you expression kind of stuff. And we get just enough of that that I think this is an artist that I think certainly if we were to come back 50, you know, drawn issues later of whatever stories, you know, the artist will have had time to iron out a couple of kinks, polish his craft just a bit more, whatever. But this is somebody I really think has the potential of becoming that superstar artist down the line. But is early in the career, I think, at this
point.
Right,
I don't disagree with that. And, yeah. You know, I don't want to be overly harsh on the guy. Because, I mean, I'm reading the book. And I'll read a book that doesn't have, you know, 5 out of 5 art on it that I think is the greatest art I've ever seen in my life. You know, and I don't want to knock this art. It's not bad art. It tells the story effectively. It's perfectly fine art.
It's not a story you're going to read because
exactly.
Of the art.
You know, yeah. There are some books that you'll read and it's like, well, you know, the story's kind of weak, but you know, I'm going to buy that just for the art. You know, this one, the art complements the story. It tells the story and it's just fine, but it's not that I was blown away by the art kind of art. And you're right. You know, it's like as the artist, because he's got the fundamentals down, yeah. As you say, I mean, the pacing, the storytelling, you know, the expressions and, you know, kind of how he wants to tell the story, those are far and away above what I see a lot of other artists doing. It's just some of the finishing details and, you know, maybe, as you say, as time goes on, you know, we'll see that tighten up, you know, because any artist, you can see them progress, you know, as they get more and more pages of art done and more issues of art done, that kind of stuff just through honing of their craft by doing is going to tighten up. So this is definitely an artist I want to see progress like this because doing a great job here. And all I want to point out on that is don't just flip through the book and dismiss it because you see art that's not the most perfect art in the world. I mean, there are a lot of comics out there that aren't going to have, you know, that whatever your favorite style is, whether it's Kevin Maguire, whether it's, you know, Alex Ross or Alex Maleev or whoever is your favorite type of artist. I mean, try some things out because they've got okay art or even good art, but, you know, it's the story that's going to capture your heart and kind of read through a couple of the pages. I think, you know, you make a good point on like pages 4 and 5. I mean, just read pages 4 and 5. And, if, you know, those to me are kind of like the seller pages, you know.
Yeah. That's Foster. The kind of thing if I had to do a movie trailer kind of a thing and kind of pick one scene, this is that scene, you know, because it really tells you enough about the lead character and kind of kicks the story off very strongly that it'll sell people on it. And I think you're right. If people just flip through this in the store, it's like, yeah, it looks okay. Because, again, while the art, I think, is, like you said, very, you know, competent and stuff, it's not one of those where it's like, wow, this is just such beautiful art, I got to hang it on my wall or anything. It's doing what it's supposed to do. It's telling the story and telling it damn well and not getting in the way of the story. You know, I would love to see the script for this issue to know the script and the treatment. I want to know kind of what Trevor Price said, okay, this is what we're setting out to do, what he created, what David Zybart, you know, then scripted out and then handed to Dan Glassell, just to kind of see where some of the elements kind of came in or whatever. Because, you know, one of the things I really felt clicked on this was Dan Glassell, as the artist, really got the story. He conveyed the story very effectively. And there are a couple of things where I think if he just didn't really get it and certain things didn't play visually, we'd have been left really kind of wanting as readers. So I really think that this team has gelled very successfully. I'm totally in for the rest of this. I would love to see another miniseries after this. I think this is another knock it out of the park kind of a winner from Red 5. I mean, to me, this was a 5 out of 5. This was fun. I want to see more.
I gave it a 4 out of 5, and a solid 4 out of 5. I definitely am going to want to read more, and, you know, this is a great series. Again, you know, like you say, Red 5 has a pretty good eye for putting out series that I like. I mean, my sensibilities line up with the sensibilities of the guys there who are deciding what to green light, usually,
yeah.
You know, for the most part. They've been pretty successful with me.
I would like to see them get a little bit more successful in the marketing department, because this was one I was on the fence on, you know, on the solicitation cycle. I'll give it a shot or whatever. It looks like it could be fun. But there wasn't a whole lot to go on there. And I'm seeing a couple of indicators that, you know, like many smaller press companies, this is something that may get on the shelf in some stores, but is not getting the market penetration it needs, is not getting the awareness it needs to really sell as well as I think the material justifies. You know, every week we've got on the website the Here's What We've Reviewed Weekly Comic Spotlight list on one of the pages, and I've got links to Comic Book DB for everything. I've been looking for the what to link to there, and I don't even think the comic's in Comic Book DB yet. Granted, it's only been out a couple of days, etc., but given how fast everything else gets up, you know, to me that's an indicator that, you know, again, this comic in particular, and, you know, a lot of other comics at this kind of smaller end of the publisher size spectrum, it's hard for them to really get the comic out there, get people aware of it. And with something that's this fun and this strong, that just frustrates me.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many good comics out there to check out. You know, we don't even scratch the surface of it. And, you know, it's going to be a completely different set for every person. That's the thing. You know, it's like John and I, you know, we like the same books like this one. You know, we agree on this one. You know, we agree on Atomic Robo, you know. But then there are other books that I will absolutely love that John doesn't care for. And there's one that John loves that I don't particularly care for. You know, not everyone's going to have the exact same sensibilities, let's say, for what they like. But there's so much variety out there, especially in the back half of previews, that if you poke around and check out some things, there is some real veins of hidden gold out there.
Yeah,
that I just like mining, you know, sometimes finding some of these things that are out there.
And it's so great. I mean, you know, we do something like Foster Broussard here, and it's one of those, you know, this could have gone either way. It could have been as good as it was, or, you know, there are a lot of books out there that it's like, this looks fun, this looks different, and they didn't quite pull it off for whatever reason. You know, but when you hit something like this that you've taken a chance on, and it really clicks with you, I mean, to me, that's so much fun. That's one of the great things about comics, is there's always that new thing to discover, you know, even if it's just new to you. I mean, we've been doing this, you know, Weekly Comic Spotlight for just shy of 200 episodes now. We've covered, you know, well over 600 comics just in these episodes, not to mention the back issue spotlights, all the stuff we talk about in the preview spotlights and stuff. And there have been quite a few comics that, you know, I've gotten just, yeah, on a lark, you know, I'll try the first issue, whatever, or specifically to cover for the podcast, or just because I've been hearing, you know, other people talk about them. I got on late with Elephant Men, with Uncle Scrooge. I'm trying to think of some others like that, you know?
Usagi Yojimbo.
That was the other one I was trying to think of. Yeah, that's a great example there. I've loved that so much. I've gotten the two hardcover set collection and every trade after that to catch me up, you know? So I'm really hoping that as we're talking about these different comics, that, you know, whether we like it or not, that we're giving you guys enough information to say, you know, wow, that Foster Broussard, that's something I should get. Or even if it's something that Bob and I have panned, we've given you reasons as to why we pan it, and you're like, well, you know, I disagree with them. That's something that would be in my wheelhouse, even if it's not for them.
Yeah, I think we were pointing out that, you know, it's like there's only one book ever that we've given like a really bad, I don't want to name it, but we brought it up. It came up on the previews call because it's coming out in like a trade paperback
We've
version.
got the 1 to 5 rating, and there's one book that both of us said, you know, we got to give this the goose egg. It gets 0. You know, it is so ineffectively told.
You know, and that's the thing is, like, we usually say, hey, you know, it's not that this is, and we try to avoid, you know, it's like, not that this is a bad comic. You know, it's like, in general, there aren't bad comics, except for that one. You know, but it's just that, you know, this one wasn't to my particular liking, but, you know, even though I didn't like it, someone else could think this is the greatest comic book ever.
Well,
You
it's
know,
funny
and.
because we've had one of those too, where you gave it a 1 and I gave it a 5. And
Yeah.
again, it shows that, you know, we've got similarities in taste, but there are a few where we're just diametrically opposed. But it is funny that, you know, I think we're usually pretty good of saying it just didn't click with us and we're giving it a low rating because of that. But man, there is that one. It's like if somebody could give that maybe not a 5 out of 5, but even a 4 out of 5, I would love to read that review. Or hear that review and just understand what did they get out of that comic that I so completely missed.
But you know, in general, hey, there's so much out there in comics, and you know, we're moving from, I think we're also going to say, you know, actually it'll be next month, you know, we're moving from the, you know, to a new age of comics, you know, we're called the digital age, really, with the DC going line wide day and date digital and having the line wide relaunch and all this, you know, and Marvel is going to be coming up with something that is a counterpoint to that so that they can try to steal at least some of DC's thunder. There's going to be a lot of buzz around Marvel and DC for the next couple of months. But and that's great. I love the Marvel and DC books, but don't let that wash aside that there are so many really good other kind of comics to read too.
Yeah. It's one of those things that it can take some time to go through the back half of previews, but some of the stuff you're going to find there is really great. I mean, and we're going to talk about this obviously in a lot more depth in the preview spotlight coming up, but you know, in the latest previews, the Justice Machine is back. I mean, I find that really cool, you know, but if anyone just looking at kind of the, well, I've spent my allotment on, you know, Marvel and DC and stuff, I think they are missing some great material by other publishers. So that pretty much do it.
Pretty much does it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Flashpoint, Emperor Aquaman number 1 from DC, Ghost Rider number 0.1 from Marvel, and Echo number 30 from Abstract Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.